Lori was miserable sitting there. The parents of young defendants have been consigned to a peculiar purgatory in these trials. We were expected to be present, but silent. We were implicated in Jacob's crime as both victims and perpetrators. We were pitied since we had done nothing wrong. We had just been unlucky, lost the pregnancy lottery, and been stuck with a rogue child. Sperm plus egg equals murderer, something like that. Can't be helped. At the same time, we were despised. Somebody had to be responsible for Jacob, and we had created the boy and raised him. We must have done something wrong. Even worse, now we had the gall to support the killer. We actually wanted to see him get away with it, which only confirmed our antisocial nature, our bone-deep badness. Of course, the public view of us was so contradictory and jumped up with emotion that there was no way to answer it, no right way to act. People would think what they wanted. They would imagine for us whatever sinister or suffering interior life they chose. And for the next 2 weeks, Lori would play her part. She would sit there at the back of the courtroom as still and expressionless as a marble statue. She would watch the back of her son's head, trying to interpret the tiniest micro-movements. She would react to nothing. It did not matter that once she had held that baby boy in her arms and whispered in his ear, "Shh, shh." At this point, nobody gave a shit. When he finally took the bench, Judge French scanned the room as the clerk read out the case. Number 08-4407, Commonwealth versus Jacob Michael Barber, a single count of murder in the first degree, for the defendant, Jonathan Klein. For the Commonwealth, Assistant District Attorney Neil LaJudas. The judge's handsome, grave face settled briefly on each of the players, Jacob, the lawyers, even us, conferring on each a momentary significance while we were in his gaze, which vanished as soon as his eyes swept on. Over the years, I had tried many cases before Judge French, and although I thought he was a bit of an empty suit, I liked him well enough. He had been a football player at Harvard, a defensive lineman. In his senior year, he had fallen on a fumble in the end zone against Yale, and this singular, brilliant moment had stuck with him. He kept a framed picture of it on his office wall, big Bert French in his crimson and gold uniform, lying on his side on the ground, cuddling the precious egg he'd found. I suspect the picture struck me differently than it did Judge French. To me, he was the sort of guy such things happened to. Rich and good-looking and all the rest, no doubt opportunities had always presented themselves like so many footballs lying in his way, and he had merely to fall on them, all the while presuming his good fortune was the natural product of his talent. One wonders how a charmed man like him would have been affected by a father like Bloody Billy Barber. All that ease, all that naturalness, all that credulous self-confidence. For years I had studied men like Bert French, despised them, copied them.